Hurricane Sandy blasted the Atlantic coast, bringing devastation to cities and towns that it thought to be fairly safe from such storms. Has something changed? Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush, and we'll look at that question, as well as the implications for the future. We have, we're hoping to have Mayor Rick Meehan. He's the mayor of Ocean City. Also, John Mateko. He's a local architect and community activist in Lewis, Delaware. And, of course, that state took really the brunt of the storm, at least here on Delmarva. And a bit later, we'll be talking with Mike Tidwell. He's founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Talk about the implications, particularly in terms of global warming. And in studio, we have political science professor Michael Laughlin, and who will take a look at the debate that we're now having over the role of the federal government in dealing with the crisis. And we want to first now turn to Mayor Rick Meehan. He is in Ocean City. And Mr. Mayor, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning.
And I think we're having trying to connect with him just a moment here. And we should have him coming up. And by the way, I wanted to ask you, Michael, before we get into the business about the crisis here with Hurricane Sandy, we just had some unemployment stats that came out. Okay, we do now appear to have the mayor. Are you on the line, Mr. Mayor?
Well, I hope I am. Good morning.
I hope so. Well, it looks like things are working there in Ocean City. Well, let me first of all ask you, what's the situation with Ocean City right now? Are you? I know that earlier in the week, I think you were talking about Ocean City looks like it might be back in business in a fairly quick order. What's the situation right now in the resort?
Well, we are back in business. We're still in the recovery mode, cleaning up some debris and assisting our residents and business owners with cleaning up some of the debris that have washed onto their properties. But to the best of my knowledge, all city facilities are open, the boardwalk's open, everything is open in Ocean City, so we're good to go at the moment.
Now, I do understand that the fishing pier took a real serious hit. What's the situation? What was the damage there, and what kind of efforts will be taken to get it restored?
Well, we lost probably, and I don't know the exact, but I'm guessing a little over 100 feet of the easternmost portion of the fishing pier, where there's a T-section at the end. Those pilings began to buckle and gave way, and really you could almost anticipate that with the storm surge we had and the height of those waves. So we lost about 100 feet of the easternmost portion. It is east of that fishing supply building that's right there on the pier, and it didn't have any effect on any of the rides or anything to the west. That pier is actually a franchise, and there's a franchisee that operates that pier, and he is responsible for maintaining that pier and maintaining the length of that pier. So I'm sure we're going to be having some discussions with the franchisee about how that's going to be repaired, when that repair will take place. Hopefully we will have that repair done prior to the 2013 season.
Is it, by the way, does he qualify for government assistance at this point, or do you know where the resources are going to be coming from to actually get that repaired?
I do not know, based on the fact that it is privately owned, how that assistance would work. I'm sure that's something we're going to have a conversation about in the next couple of weeks.
Now, how did the beaches fare? Any serious erosion? What did that look like?
Well, the beach looks pretty good. What I'm going to do is to give you a really good example of our beach and how it fared during Hurricane Sandy. In 1985, Hurricane Gloria came through Ocean City. Sandy was very similar to Gloria in many ways because of the extreme high tide and surge on the bayside and the intense ocean on the oceanfront. Very similar, not exact, but very similar. During Hurricane Gloria, we lost our entire boardwalk, and we had major damage all up and down the oceanfront to oceanfront buildings. Since 1985, we have built the beach replenishment project. We had a very similar storm this week, but we now have the seawall along the boardwalk and the dune system in place from the seawall to the Delaware line. We had no structural damage to our boardwalk at all, and very little, if any, damage to oceanfront properties from the surf. So there you go. It's a great parallel, and it shows you what the difference today is compared to 1985.
One other thing is, was there any impact on the not on the Atlantic coast side, but the inland bay and some of the inland waterways there? Because I know there's like Ocean Pines, which is obviously dealing with some flooding just on a general basis. Any impact there at all, or did that come through unscathed?
That's probably where we had most of our impact. We were aware that this was going to be a water event. We were much more concerned about the high tides and the tide surge than we were the winds as this storm was approaching. And it was a premium high tide cycle. It was a full moon. It was coming in at high tide. We knew we were going to have some problems, and that's exactly what happened. We had a storm surge of a little over just about 7 feet above mean low water, and that is the highest surge we have had since Hurricane Gloria. So we anticipated, that's why we evacuated the downtown area south of 17th Street, because we knew those low-lying areas would be impacted. And then we did get an awful lot of water downtown. We did have flooding, and we also had, I think, a lot of impact along the bayfront to private properties, particularly to piers and decks and backyards and things like that. Not structural damage to buildings, but we did experience, and I think the private sector experienced, a lot of damage along the bayfront to those outdoor facilities.
Now, will those residents and those people who own that property, will they be qualifying for any kind of governmental assistance or any special assistance, or do you know at this point what their options are?
Yeah, I don't know at this point. I know we are going to work with them. We're certainly going to work with them through the rebuilding and the permitting process to try to accelerate that and allow them to build back what they had there before without a lot of red tape. You know, we're going to try to make sure we can do that as quickly as possible to help them. You know, I can tell you the residents and the business owners certainly partnered with us during this storm. They did everything we asked them to try to keep themselves safe and protect their properties. Now it's our role to work with them to try to rebuild or make repairs and get back into the same position they were prior to the storm.
So just quickly, we anticipate that Ocean City will be ready and up and running and all set for next summer and the season. You should be in pretty good shape then?
Oh, absolutely. We will be. I mean, we're in good shape now. The weather looks like a great forecast. I hate to say that, but it really does. And I guarantee Ocean City will be crowded this weekend. The boardwalk's open. Everything's cleaned up. We're still working out on the beach, moving sand around away from the seawall and spreading it out. The Army Corps of Engineers were here on Wednesday to survey the beach to see if there's anything we need to do out there to repair the dune system or to pump any sand into the beach. So we're proactive with that. But, you know, the town is very resilient. Our city employees and staff have done an absolutely fantastic job. And, you know, we're not as unfortunate as those to the north of us that have such extreme hardships and facing the tragedies that they are. And we're certainly thinking about them. But here in Ocean City, the good news, any resources that might have come here can go up there to assist those places to the north.
We've been speaking with Mayor Rick Meehan. He's, of course, the mayor of Ocean City, and we appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Now, take care.
Okay, you too. And we're going to move on next to John Mateko in a moment. He's a local architect up in Lewis, Delaware, as well as a community activist. And, of course, as most people know, at least on the Delmarva Peninsula, we saw a good deal of impact, particularly in the state of Delaware. Michael, Professor Laughlin, I want to turn to you. I mean, one of the things that seemed to indicate, certainly from what the mayor has said, it's certainly in Ocean City, is that there was a lot of governmental planning going on between, say, 1985 and now to sort of minimize some of this impact.
There's no question about it that again, when you look back on when FEMA was created in 1979, but under the Carter administration. And the whole mission of the federal effort is to support and to coordinate the efforts of state and local governments in response to disasters. And more, I think, is to anticipate the disaster and prepare for it. The news that's coming out with regard to this, the response to Hurricane Sandy, is that to the extent that the federal effort has been much more successful than, let's say, the response to Katrina, it has to do with the preparedness prior to the storm landing, so that equipment was set up, experts were deployed. And that the response could be, therefore, be that much faster to the disaster afterwards.
Now, I want to turn to John Mateko. He is up in Lewis, Delaware. Welcome to the program, John. Let me first of all ask you, what was the damage like there? What was it like there during the storm, at least in terms of its aftermath? How are you guys doing, faring up there?
Well, we're pretty good here compared to many other places. My friends on Lewis Beach tell me that they had a couple of feet of water right up surrounding their houses. They couldn't get out, and the water level reportedly reached up to about 6 feet on Savannah Road, the main road getting to the area. You saw some of that on national television. All the folks here on the westerly side of town, many of them have some flooded basements, and a few big trees fell down and that type of thing, but we were largely spared.
So and down, I know that's Rehoboth. I guess Rehoboth Beach, I think, got some hits as well. But it sounds like Delaware came out better than they certainly had expected. And I understand, by the way, part of that reason, that Delaware did not get quite as hit as fast is because, or as much, is because I understand that the wind speeds actually, the storm actually moved a little more quickly than anticipated, and actually passed Delaware a little faster, and then of course hit New Jersey. What do you hear out of Rehoboth? It's the same kind of thing where there was some minimal damage, but not too bad.
Well, I haven't been down there, actually, Don. I wanted to stay off the roads because of there's plenty of
sure.
need for other people to be moving around. But I think they have it probably a little bit worse than we have it, but we really need to get reports from them.
Now, let me ask you this, and we, you know, you and I talked a little bit about sea level rise, which is one of the key elements in all of this. How do you see sea level rise playing into what we are seeing in terms of this storm and in terms of whatever preparations that certainly Lewis has been involved in making to try to deal with certainly sea level rise as well as the implication, obviously, of the surge from a storm like this?
Well, you know, from a news perspective, Don, we may look back at this event, and this is the event where everyone began to change their mind about what's going on with climate change. And one of the effects of climate change is sea level rise, but there are others which, frankly, as an architect, I'm more worried about, and it. Just think about the temperatures we had during the summer. We had summer storms associated with power outages, and elderly and sick who were depending on air conditioning to stay in habitable spaces during extreme heat events succumbed. There were some deaths. And a lot of the research coming out now is saying that as bad as these hurricanes are, we will be facing the threat from climate change, not only from sea level rise and what we saw on the Jersey coast in New York City, but from summer heat events. Now, about a decade ago, 93, there were 300 excess deaths attributed to an extreme heat event in the city of Chicago. We've forgotten about that. In Paris and in Europe, a staggering number, 70,000 excess deaths, meaning that would not normally have occurred, were attributable to the extreme heat events of 1994. The research is suggesting that the leading edge, which is going to drive political action and make politicians have to take notice, just as this storm is doing, would be extreme heat events plus these storm events in the winter. And this is all over the news for the last 2 or 3 days. Bloomberg's Business Week report has on its cover It's global warming, stupid.
Let me ask you this. What, architecturally speaking, are the cities beginning to respond? I know that there's some efforts going on in the state of Delaware to try to figure out what needs to be done, and obviously they're going to be doing certain things down the road. New York City itself has to reassess what it's doing in terms of the kind of surge that they saw and how they can deal with it. Are cities and government officials finally beginning to deal with the architectural side of this in terms of how they at least deal and try to mitigate the impact of global warming when it comes to these kinds of either heat, but also as well as the storms?
Yes. In Delaware, Governor Markell and Colin O'Mara, who heads the Department of Natural Resources, are doing an excellent job. They're right at the foundation of this problem. They're dealing with a new set of infrastructure that's walkable and bikeable. Now, it may sound funny, but that's what drives development and the way to mitigate the carbon pollution, which is generating these storms, to get to the root of the problem. That's at the root of the problem. A new way to look at land use planning, and that's primarily the role of states and counties and local government. Under our Constitution, the federal government doesn't like to go there. So it really falls on the hands of governors and county officials. Now, in terms of what's happening, probably if your audience wants to look at the best plan in the United States, one of them, go to Plan New York City. Actually, it's PLANYC. It takes you there. And they have integrated under Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, a plan to grow the city in terms of prosperity, in quality of life, in the environment, in reducing urban heat extreme events in the summer, and in dealing for storms. And it's very sad, and it's really sad. All of the things that were predicted that would happen in that plan, those are the things that have happened to New York City, the flooding of subways and power outages and so forth. So the data and the predictions are right spot on. I think this overall event will be a wake-up call for the United States.
We've been speaking with John Mateko. He's a local architect and community activist in Lewis, Delaware. And, of course, Delaware took the brunt of the storm. I want to move on in a moment to Mike Tidwell. He's founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. I want to turn back to Professor O'Loughlin. You heard a moment ago that some of the cities and they're beginning to plan for at least dealing with some of the global implications of global warming. Is this essentially, in terms of planning and so on, do you think that's basically a state and local process? I mean, the federal government certainly can bring resources to it, but at the ground level, they got to figure this out, and they're the most impacted as well.
Well, yes, I think common sense tells us that those at the center of the locations should be the ones helping to define and coordinate what will need to have to be done if and when a disaster occurs, so that the federal government can supply resources, as I said, expertise in the Army Corps of Engineers and so forth, to help out. But it need not be the detailed detachment there to work all that out. Having said that, however, I think it's important to add that I'd like to say, for example, with regard to Ocean City, that FEMA, for example, does provide loans for small businesses. So to the extent that the owner of the pier is a small business, he may, in fact, be eligible for some FEMA support. But if you just go down the list of what FEMA offers, rental payments for temporary housing, grants for home repairs, grants for medical needs that have not been covered by health insurance and so on, even unemployment benefits for people who have been put out of work and not supported by state benefits can also be eligible. One other statistic that may be important here is to, when, just to get a sense of the kind of resources that FEMA brings to bear. In the fiscal year 13 budget, it's a $10 billion budget with around $5.5 billion in disaster relief funds. For New Jersey, they're only speaking of, their budget only can accommodate millions rather than billions for the kind of relief. And this disaster is estimated to be $50 billion on up. So one can, I think, begin to see how, in effect, essential federal support in the federal government having an agency that is built to respond nationally to the various crises that will occur across the country is really a necessary resource supply to get fast and efficient relief to people when they need it.
I want to turn now to Mike Tidwell. He's founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Welcome to the program, Mike. And I want to, I guess one of the questions is this what we're seeing just this past weekend? Is this a wave of the future? Is this what we should expect from now on in terms of rise in sea level, storm surges, perhaps even more intense storms, if not an increase in number? Is that the future, do you think?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on your show, Don, and thanks for addressing this topic. The question that's being asked all over the country is, did global warming cause Sandy? And in my view, and that of a growing number of other people who pay a lot of attention to these things, is the answer is yes. There's no doubt. No one doubts that sea level is rising. You can talk to people up and down the bay who are seeing islands completely disappear and properties erode. We know that sea level is rising. It's risen about a foot in the last century in the mid-Atlantic, and that's a lot. It's projected to rise another 2 to 3 feet this century because of global warming and the combustion of oil, coal, and natural gas that create these greenhouse gases that are trapping heat. So we know the oceans are rising. We know the oceans are getting warmer. We know there's more moisture in the atmosphere. These are systemic changes to the climate and to our physical features of our planet. So systemically, there's no doubt that climate change made Sandy the really big, broad, powerful storm that she turned out to be. Systemically, we've raised oceans. Systemically, we've raised the temperature of oceans. Systemically, we've put more moisture in the atmosphere because of climate change triggers more evaporation in the ocean, and what goes up must come down in terms of precipitation. So the answer is, to your question is yes, this is climate-driven, and yes, we can expect more unless we get off of the fossil fuels that are driving it.
Do you think that there is the political will to do this? I mean, we've all been focused on Hurricane Sandy, and it certainly will have some repercussions. But there are a lot of interests and a lot of political interests as well, which have pushed back against either the idea of global warming, even with Hurricane Sandy, or that they're just simply going to stop moving forward. I mean, for instance, there was a discussion earlier on Morning Edition about cap and trade and how that just simply stalled out. The president hasn't talked a lot about it, in part because it just simply is not politically an option in terms of getting anything through Congress. Do you think that there will be a political will to change that attitude towards moving towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions?
I do, and I'll tell you what I think the game changer is going to be. As your previous guest said, you know, we could have $50 billion in total losses from this storm alone. Insurance companies are in trouble. Travelers, Allstate, all of these major insurance companies are increasingly in trouble because of these fantastically huge and destructive and expensive storms. Travelers Insurance sent me in the mail just a month ago a flyer showing a two-story house with a nice garage and a tornado about to hit it and dark storm clouds over it. And Travelers said in that flyer to me and people, millions of people all over the country, we're going to raise your insurance rates because extreme weather is happening more frequently. And then there's an asterisk, and you look down at the asterisk at the bottom of this mailer from Travelers. It says they cite global warming studies as to why this is happening. there's going to come a point where Allstate and Travelers Insurance and all the major insurers in this country are going to start pointing to ExxonMobil and Chevron and Peabody Coal, and they're going to say, you're putting us out of business. We can't function in our corporate insurance model any longer because the weather is unpredictable, off the charts, unaffordably expensive. You guys are putting us out of business. That is going to be a powerful corporate voice joining the coalition of, you know, other constituencies saying we need to stop all the carbon pollution. So I think that's a game changer that's going to emerge very soon after Sandy.
We've been speaking with Mike Tidwell. He's founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. I want to now turn to Michael Laughlin, because there's a political campaign going on here, and there's been a great debate over the last year or so about the size of government, and whether or not the government, there's big government, and it even gotten down to the FEMA. And we'll refer to particularly a question that apparently Mitt Romney, Republican presidential nominee, talked about either privatizing FEMA or maybe turning it back to the states. And he was asked whether he would shut down FEMA and let states handle disaster relief on their own. He said, quote, absolutely, every time you have an occasion to take something from the federal government and send it back to the states, that's the right direction. And if you go even further and send it back to the private sector, that's even better. We've had that debate. We've also had, of course, obviously President Obama talking about the role of government. And he's been charged with being, I guess, a redistribution kind of guy in terms of wealth. What kind of impact do you think Sandy's going to have on this debate about the size of government and the role of the government, particularly the federal government?
Well, I think we've already seen a great evidence to the contrary. Mitt Romney has flipped once again. In his most recent study, he affirmed that he, if he became president, that he would support FEMA and that he would ensure that it had sufficient resources to do its job. I think another piece of evidence is that Chris Christie, who is a Republican governor of New Jersey, has been praising President Obama and the FEMA for coming to their aid efficiently and quickly at the present time. So I think that the debate ultimately is a hollow debate. Because the realities I think we're facing are of national scale, and the ability of states to respond is simply limited. I mean, I think the numbers I presented a moment ago, no state. I mean, New Jersey's a rich state. New York's a rich state. They simply, however, do not have the resources to be able to put a budget aside in case of a hurricane disaster. Only the federal government has the ability to draw resources from the various states across the country to pull together and maintain an agency that can be in a position of responding when disasters occur. And again, I would emphasize it's both not simply response after the disaster occurs, but preparation prior to the disaster. So I think that going forward, I would agree with the climate change analysis that this certainly is a wake up call, and that moving forward we're going to see, I would suspect, more funding for FEMA, and more efforts to coordinate to prepare for consequences of global warming.
By the way, before we get out of this this show, I need to ask you about, as we started a moment ago, unemployment rate. It's 7.9%. I think it was, what, over 100,000, I think, jobs added. Yeah. What do you make of this number, good, bad? And we're, what, 4 days, something like that now from the election?
I think most economists argue that this is simply the trajectory that was expected. Politically, it has, I think, no significant bearing. If it had gone back up to over 8%, then certainly the Romney campaign could have made a political fodder out of that. But the fact that it only inches up 0.1% indicates that it's a fairly stagnant number. Then the jobs numbers themselves are a little bit of an uptick. So I think overall it is a wash politically. Again, economically, for the rest of us who have to suffer through an economy, it's certainly mixed news at best.
We've been speaking with Professor Michael Laughlin. He is a professor of political science at Salisbury University, and talking about lots of things, including the role of the federal government. Also, earlier we talked with Mike Tidwell. He's founder and executive director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. And before that, John Mateko, he's a local architect and community activist in Lewis, Delaware. Delaware, of course, got the brunt of the storm on the Delmarva Peninsula, but certainly not like in New York or New Jersey. And at the top of the show, we talked to Mayor Rick Meehan. He's mayor of Ocean City, and talking about the situation there. And he says that they are open for business, and they'll probably get that pier taken care of. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.